Bremner Reel 3. Now, towards the end of 15, you were posted for a very short while to Dover. Well, what was the nature of your activities there?
Well, mainly having found I could fly the Bristol Bullet, Bristol Scout, to practice on it. There was no instruction that I can remember of any sort. It just went up whenever I could. It'd been December and been hit on top of a cliff. The weather wasn't too good. The aerodrome was on a slant. Tremendously steep. Wasn't very easy to land. I did get a certain amount of flying in and was then posted to the Dardanelles.
What was your first operational posting?
We were posted to the Dardanelles. First, I remember about six of us. We travelled a civilian way across France by train to Marseille and then by ship to Malta. I can't remember what the ship was at all.
While you were going across France, did you see much signs of the great activities of the West?
Nothing at all. We went across France by night.
Yes.
All I can remember was that it was a frightfully cold night and there was no heating on the train. And we were packed in the carriage and I slept on the floor.
What happened when you got to Malta?
When we got to Malta, we reported to the SNO, who'd never heard of us. Didn't know what to do at all, so he finally said, well, I can't let you go on further till I know what you're supposed to do. So he put us in a hotel. And I'd rushed off from England in such a hurry that I'd only had half my typhoid injection. And I knew of doctors stationed in Malta, so I left the hotel and went to the other end of the island to his hospital and got my second jab. When I got back to the hospital, everyone disappeared. So I reported to the naval office again. I was told we were going to the Dardanelles. And if I hurried, I could just catch the ship, which I did. There was a supply ship ran from Malta to Mudros regularly, once a week, I think it was.
Mm.
And that took us to Mudros. And from there, I can't remember whether that ship took us on to Imbros or whether they sent another ship. I think there must have been a small ship took us to Imbros.
After Mudros, where were you posted?
We were sent to Imbros, which was the operational aerodrome. Mudros was merely headquarters. And Imbros was much nearer the peninsula. Our aerodrome there was between a leaky bay, which was the harbour, and a salt lake. And the other side of us, most of around us, were sand dunes and hills on one side down which the wind used to come. There are unexpected directions and unexpected times, making landing rather difficult. Another difficulty which I found was that I'd always been flying on a grass aerodrome. With a grass aerodrome, by glancing over the side when you were landing, you could tell by what the grass looked like as to roughly what your height was. If you were... once you could see the details of the grass, the blades of grass, then you knew you were pretty close to the ground. Imbros was a mud aerodrome with no details to see. And that if you just glanced over, there was just a brown surface there, and it was very difficult to judge your height. I was gonna, you judge distance naturally with binocular vision.
What does that mean?
Well, your two eyes look at the same point, and in some extraordinary way by the feel of your eyes, I suppose, but you can judge the distance pretty accurately. Whereas if you haven't a single point on which you can focus, make sure that you're looking at with both eyes, you can't judge the distance the same way. The difficulty of landing, I think, at least my difficulty, was illustrated, I think, by one flight I had in a Bristol Scout. And I was taking off, and Flight Lieutenant Savory was behind me, taking off behind me in a Nieuport, which was a slightly faster machine. And it was a very strong headwind, and I was about 1,000 feet before I was I was still over the aerodrome. When suddenly my engine cut absolutely dead. There was no missing or anything like that. It just cut dead. I knew Savory was behind me, so I threw both my arms over my head and then pushed the joystick forward.
What does the arms over the head?
Show Savory that I was out of control.
I see.
And Savory, as I dived down, Savory went up behind me like that. And then I did the wrong thing. What was technically the wrong thing, except that straight ahead of me were sand dunes from which I couldn't hope to land. So I turned downwind. And back over the side of the aerodrome where the sheds were, and almost just cleared them comfortably, and tried to do then a completely vertical turn over the Salt Lake, and my wingtip almost went into the water, but not quite. Then I had a little rise, about a foot, which was the bank of the Salt Lake, and I just managed to get her over that. And then I hoped I was going to land quite nicely when a gust came down from the hills, picked me up about 50 feet, turned me on my back. I then planed down upside down and landed upside down. The first thing that hit the ground was the top of my top plane. And I had to catch hold of the launcher on each side of my fuselage and pull myself into my seat and hunch up. And my head missed the ground by about 2 or 3 inches. And then I saw the mechanic rushing out to me. I'd never seen him. He was a young man just come out, and he was white as a sheet. And then I saw the soil cart, which was also the ambulance, coming down from the hospital. Pick me up. However, I dropped out, and all I did was to cut the knee of my britches getting out.
What were your main duties with number two wing?
Main duty really were two. One was to spot for the monitors. We had 15-inch monitors, who used to bombard the peninsula every now and then, and also keep an eye on the straits, because there was always the rumour that the Goeben was coming out. And we were sent off to make sure she wasn't.
How were the duties of keeping an eye out for the Goeben organized and carried out?
Well, there was... one had a standard instruction, of course, that whenever one was spotted, one always did have a look up the straits to make quite sure, as far as you could see, that there was nothing coming out. We would get rumors that she was coming out, and we were immediately sent off any machine that we had. The first one was sent up to go and have a look and see. We never actually saw anything. When I was flying the little Bristol, I used to take that machine up to look for the Goeben, because it was the handiest machine, and I liked flying it best.
Were patrols arranged for regular intervals?
No, I don't think
it was so. Fairly haphazard.
Fairly haphazard.
Yes. And now, tell me a bit more about spotting for the monitors. Could you break that down?
Well, yes. Spotting, you had to do in a two-seater. You had to have an observer. We had a wireless transmitter, wireless telegraphy transmitter, which you could transmit a code. And you had to keep coming back towards the ship every now and then, see, because she laid out strip signals on the deck to tell you when she'd finish and when you could go home and that sort of thing. And I used to fly circles around the target and then take an extended sweep round over the ship to see if she'd laid out anything and then go back. On one occasion I got tired of this. So instead of flying a big circle around the ship, I did a figure of eight and crossed the line of fire. I was very careful not to do this until I could see the top of the gun barrel. Once I could see the top of the gun barrel, I knew I was under the trajectory. But on one occasion, she fired just as I was crossing, and I wasn't high enough above, because the 15-inch shell passing underneath me created such a disturbance that my own machine went down just like a stone. remained flat, but down in the, I sort of hit the bottom of the air, or the hole, let's say, that the shell had made, almost with a bang, and my wings went up a bit. And then I was all right, but I think I dropped about 500 feet.
Was the German air service much in evidence at this time? See, this would be what, sort of mid-16?
Early in 16, really. Yes, they used to send a machine used to come over and drop a few bombs. It was usually a stick of four bombs. Not very big ones. I can't remember what the machine was. It wasn't anything very exciting. We never succeeded in catching him. We didn't have proper warning when he was coming. And we didn't really keep a machine and pilots standing by because he came so really infrequently.
Did he do much damage?
No, I don't think he hit anything. We had slit trenches, which we used to get into when he came over. And we had one fellow who was very anxious to get a photograph of a bomb practically going off. And in one occasion, the fourth bomb of the stick went off quite close to our trench, and he popped out and bent over with his camera to take a photograph. But the Hun had also dropped some grenades with streamers on, which came round down rather more slowly. And just as he was bending over to take the photograph, one dropped fairly close behind him and peppered his bottom thoroughly.
In what other ways were the German air service in evidence?
Well, really sort of wise thing they did was every now and then to send a first-class pilot, people like Bodiker, I think, Bilker or Bodiker, used to come in with a Fokker. And we'd nothing all our two-seaters, my old brother was just sitting meat for him. And he shot down one pair, Bolus and...
Did you meet up with the Fokker on any of your flying activities?
Yes, on one occasion, two occasions really, but the first time was I was flying the old Voisin, which was a queer old machine. It was built of bicycle tubing and a four-wheel undercarriage, and if you made a bad landing, it galloped across the aerodrome and you had to get off again. And once you got off, it went on galloping in the air till you could get control of it. Just like this. And its maximum speed, I should say, was about 50 knots, perhaps a little more. And one occasion I'd been spotting, and my observer wanted to see something else further up the peninsula when we'd finished. And I went up there, and suddenly I found a Fokker behind me. And there was no... I only had a Lewis gun, which my observer could fire forwards and downwards. And tried to get it to bear, but couldn't. And he had several bursts at me from behind and then made off. I tried to see where he was going, but found my engine rails were dropping. My engine then was a 14-cylinder Canton Uno, which was behind me. And he'd shot that... bullet holes through most of the cylinders, and the engine revs were dropping rapidly, so I couldn't get home, and I landed on the emergency aerodrome on the peninsula.
Was the landing straightforward?
Yes, it was. I cleared the front line trenches by about 6 feet and just popped down onto the aerodrome. They'd got a dugout there, which was really, it wasn't a future quality dugout, it was a kind of slot into the side of the hill, which would just take an aeroplane and would prevent direct hits. You couldn't hit it directly. And as soon as I landed, the mechanics rushed out and pushed me in there. And I tried to get hold of a demolition squad to destroy the machine, but they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me set fire to it or anything because they were evacuating that night.
At that very point, they were pulling out.
Yes, pulling out. And I had to go down to W Beach, and I sat there for 8 hours, I suppose.